Azalar.
Killer.co and the By George Podcasting Network present the By George Podcast with Brian Lawrence and Chris Jones, the original George Mason basketball podcast.
They're on their feet. Here, Hancock! Oh! Off the top of the backboard, no! Loose! Hancock!
Welcome back to the By George Podcast. Guys, it's been a little while, you know, after Brooklyn. We took some time off. We were a little salty, a little bitter about it, the way it all ended. But we're done looking to the past. It's time to look forward. Chris Jones, Brian on the mic. Welcome to the latest edition of By George. Chris, how you been?
I'm great. Still sheltering in place. Otherwise, I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah, and you're still working, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm technically working right now, so.
we got a special guest. You know, we've never done this before, an intro to the season with the man himself, Coach Dave Paulson. We're so excited to have you on, Coach. Thanks. And just say what's up to all your fans.
Hey, great to be on the podcast, and hope everyone's doing well. And staying safe, you know, kind of crazy times for all of us. But we're going to get through them all, and looking forward to basketball back in Eagle Bank Arena, hopefully in November.
And you're still working too, right, Coach? I mean, you're probably on the phone with the coaches all the time.
Yeah, you know what? To be honest with you, Brian, I'm working it. I'm not really sure why, but it's working more hours, and it's more crazy than it ever has been at this point. In May, typically May is a time where maybe, you know, you got a little bit more free time, but part of it is everything's so new. And instead of connecting with all the guys on my team, you know, in one setting, it's 13 or 14 phone calls or texts, and I, interestingly, this is a time where we can take on more projects, but a lot of times if you're traveling, you're flying somewhere to go recruiting, you know, maybe some of those projects go by the wayside. And now because we're working from home, really taking on a lot of these projects. So it's been interesting and in many ways invigorating. Now we want to get back to, you know, the more conventional ways of doing a business and seeing people in person. But it's been a busy and I think a productive time.
Yeah, quarantining has definitely not been a vacation. Not anyone on this podcast so far. But we want to kick it right off. Talk about the freshmen coming in, Jonesy. You know, who do you want to talk about first?
I think let's just start off the top and go to the first team All Met player, local kid, Ronald Polite, 6'1" point guard, shooting guard, however you want to define him, out of Oxon Hill, Maryland. Coach, what do you see in Ronald in terms of what he's going to bring this Mason team this coming season? And how do you plan on utilizing him?
I think the first thing to say about Ronald is he's got just great instincts. He's got a great feel for the game. He's got really innate leadership qualities. And, you know, he can see a pass ahead of the play. You know, he can see ahead of the game. He's just got some instincts that are really, really, really exciting. And I would say, Jonesy, he's 6'2 or 6'3. You know, he's grown a good couple of inches since we started recruiting him. And he's really started to emerge in his body, fill out. So I think he was a guy that when we started recruiting him was maybe, quote, quote, a little bit under the radar, and then really had a phenomenal senior year, first team all Met. And, you know, I think the thing about how we're going to use him, the game of basketball, you know, I asked this to one of somebody the other day, well, who was the point guard in the last national championship team? Obviously, we didn't have one this year. Last national championship team was Virginia. I'm like, well, who was the point guard on Virginia? Well, Kyle Guy, or was it Ty Jerome, or was it? And somebody said, what about that little guy, Kihei Clark? You know, and you go the year before at Villanova, and was it Brunson, or was it DiVincenzo, or was it Colin Gillespie? Or, you know, the previous Villanova national championship team, was it Archie Diacono, or was it Brunson? And the point is that the game of basketball, you got to have multiple ball handling dynamic guards, I think, to be successful. So Ronald is certainly that. I think the big thing for Ronald and for all four of our freshmen, I am super excited about all four of these freshmen. The question isn't if, the question is when. You know, so I think we have high expectations for these guys, but we don't want any of them to be burdened by excessively high expectations early on. You know, they'll play the role that they should play at the time when they're capable of playing it. You know, I think certainly one thing I've proven is my willingness to play freshman, yep, major minutes from day one, but also the guy who, you know, has a chance to be, again, I don't want to burden this gentleman with undue expectations, but I think A.J. Wilson has a chance to be a first-team all-conference player. I think A.J. Wilson has a guy, if he continues his progression, could be a conference player of the year candidate, and he redshirted as a mm-hmm. freshman and only played 10 minutes a game, you know, as a sophomore. You know, so redshirted, then he played 8 to 10 minutes a game for 2 years, and then when he was ready to combine everything and put it all together, you know, and he had a breakout monster junior year. So I think we're not going to be held to any arbitrary projections for Ronald or any of the other freshmen, how much they play, what their role is as a freshman. It's going to be, you know, what they're ready for and what the team needs. But I'm certainly very, very excited about Ronald.
And with Polite specifically, you know, I understand, you know, putting two guards on the floor and needing to have as many ball handlers, but you still also need shooters. Is he a guy that can step back and knock down shots as well?
Yeah, I think he's a good three-point shooter. I think he's an emerging three-point shooter. Very, very good mid-range jump shooter, and his range is extending. As his body develops, as his legs develop. And then also, I think one of the things for a lot of guards who are elite at penetrating and are elite at getting in the paint to create their own shot or force a teammate, you know, creating the mindset every time you catch the ball, you're ready to shoot the three, when a lot of guys have had success driving to the basket. You know, so I think that's an evolution of a mindset. You know, I think you started to see that with Justin Kyer. You know, I think even Otis Livingston was always a get-to-the-rim kind of guy and developed the ability to shoot. You know, he had that ability, but how to do it consistently. So I think that will be a work in progress for Ronald. He's got a nice stroke. He shoots free throws well. He shoots the mid-range well. And he shot the three well, but not a lot in high school.
Yeah. So that moves us on to a shooter, right, Jones? Tyler Kolick.
Yeah, Tyler comes in as a prolific shooter coming out of Rhode Island. You know, he has a ton of accolades, Gatorade Boys Basketball Player of the Year up in Rhode Island, averaged 20 points, 8 rebounds, had over 2,000 career points. You know, a ton of honors for this kid. Because we've had some consistency issues from beyond the arc, how do you see him playing into the team next year in terms of his role, and will he be super valuable because of his range?
So I think, you know, again, similar to Ronald, we think Tyler's going to be a phenomenal player. Super excited about him. And again, we don't want to rush, and we also don't want to limit anyone's potential role for next year. Certainly, you know, you indicated consistency shooting the ball from deep was a definite issue for us last year. Was exacerbated when Jamal Hartwell got sick. You know, I mean, I think when we, I did the stats for Jamal for his player evaluation, and in the first 9 games of the year when he was fully healthy, you know, he averaged 15 points a game and shot 39% from three. And in the last 9 games of the year, was points per game were down a little bit. He did 10 points a game, but he shot at a high rate from three, I think at 37 or something like that. And in the middle part where he was getting sick, we didn't really know what the issue was, and then he was sick. And, I mean, he really was not the same Jamal Hartwell for a month. He shot 18% from three, you know. Mm-hmm. And that really had an impact, you know, on our team's diversity in scoring. But certainly Tyler is a phenomenal 3-point shooter. And that will be a big help for us. He's got deep range and he's not afraid to take a big shot. I think the thing with Tyler is, you know, he's not just a shooter. He is an elite passer. And he's a very, very good rebounder from the guard position. Typically shooters, quote unquote shooters, their worst year shooting is their freshman year, just because the adjustment to the pace of the game, the physicality, the attention to detail. I've never coached anyone who was as good a shooter as Bryson Johnson, who's an assistant on my staff. And his freshman year at Bucknell, he shot 29% from three. And I think his sophomore year, he shot 48% from three. So there's, you know, there's going to be ups and downs for Tyler shooting the ball. He's not just a shooter. I think he's a complete guard. But certainly when he gets it going, he'll be able to give us some consistency and some explosiveness from outside the arc.
Did you have an aha moment when watching him where it was like, wow, he, because from what I read and some you know, just some scouting websites, they talk about his ball handling being a strength, and you don't always, you know, you didn't predict that, you know, I don't want to prejudge him too much, but you know, I was surprised by that. Did you have like a moment where you saw something on tape or you watched him live where you're like, okay, this kid can play?
You know, it was interesting. So Tyler played AAU ball for a guy who was my point guard when we won the national championship at Williams College, Michael Crotty. So, you know, he's a guy that I've known for, obviously, for a long time and had a relationship with. And, you know, he was like, coach, this kid can really play. And I went to go see Tyler play the day before we played at Rhode Island, you know, so 2 seasons ago. So we played at Rhode Island in January. I think it was a Sunday game. Yeah, I think it was a Sunday game on TV. So it was actually Jordan Miller's coming out party,
yeah.
His first game.
Yeah.
And so I flew in early, saw Tyler play, and then we practiced at Rhode Island. And Tyler had sprained his ankle, and he couldn't move. He just couldn't lift. He couldn't jump. And so I knew he was a great shooter, but he didn't shoot the ball particularly well that game. But what came to me was, here's a kid, you know, was hobbled, and he must have had 15 rebounds. And his vision and his ability to pass the ball was striking to me. And you know, I went to go look at a quote-unquote shooter, and I came away saying, well, I'm sure he's a good shooter. You know, I've watched the film on him. He didn't shoot it great that day because he was injured. But, boy, the kid can really, really pass it. And that was really, you know, intriguing for me. And we were, you know, all in on Tyler, you know, from that day forward.
That's content gold right there. Chris, who's next?
Well, just one last thing on Tyler. I just know that when he committed, we had so many guys, you know, people from the Northeast that cover recruiting just telling us you know, hitting us up in our DMs on Twitter, just saying, you know, you guys just got a steal. Like, everybody's just raving about Kolek. Same with Polite as well. But one guy that comes in with, I guess, more highly rated is Malik Henry out of Longview, Texas. My first question is, how did he pop up on your radar, a kid from Longview, Texas? Like, who kind of tipped you off on this kid?
You know, so I got to give all the credit for that to Pete Hutchins, the newest member of our coaching staff. And it was really, Pete did a great job. And he just basically, you know, he researched the best rebounders in the EYBL and shot blockers, and then kind of cross-referenced them in terms of, you know, who's got, you know, the Duke and the North Carolina and those types of people recruitment. And he came across Malik as a guy whose numbers and productivity were really good, because rebounding rate and shot blocking rate, those translate exceptionally well. You know, not all stats translate well to the quote-unquote next level, but rebound rate and shot blocking rate really do. And he's like, I think this is an under-recruited kid, and got film and just evaluated him based on film, you know, from the EYBL. And then started cultivating a relationship with Malik and with his high school coach. And it was just really interesting. His high school coach, Don Newton, really good coach. Pete's like, hey, the guy's going to be up in D.C. on vacation. And he convinced Coach Newton to come by and watch us practice when we were on campus. I feel like it was right around the 4th of July holiday. You know, end of June, early July. And so I didn't know anything about Coach Newton. I, at that point, had really no involvement with Malik. And, you know, Pete had Coach Newton watch our guys in the weight room. And anyone who's met Handy Hanrahan, our strength coach, there's a bundle of energy, excitement. Our guys, I think we've cultivated a really good work ethic with our guys. Coach Newton was impressed by that. Watched our practice, and it's funny, you just say, Coach, I got a guy and he can play for you, and I want him to play for you. And it was really interesting, you know, that he just saw, you know, you believe if you do things right and have a good culture about your program that it's going to pay off. And you know, and it did. And certainly we you know, really kind of upped recruitment level with Malik, and then I saw him play, you know, on the AAU circuit in July, and you were fortunate to have him commit to our program in September after his official visit.
Yeah, top 25 player in Texas, top 50 player at his position in the nation. He's winning defensive honors, had 15 and 10 and 3 blocks in his senior season.
Well, I've got a question. Now, Malik's still relatively skinny, as most kids are coming out of high school, but do you see him, you know, predominantly playing at the four, or, you know, do you see him growing and bulking up? Do you want to use him as like a true center? How do you kind of envision utilizing him?
And again, and
sure,
I'm
it's premature.
I'm not trying to be vague with any of these guys. Again, with Malik, with Ronald, with Tyler, I think the sky's the limit. I think what's important is not to burden any of these guys with undue expectations. And also for them, you know, we had a Zoom call with the four freshmen in terms of, you know, part of it, okay, what is this normal, or is there a normal? What, you know, what can they expect? But, you know, it's a process. And you know, really and truly to embrace the process and get a little bit better every day and not get so wrapped up in results. You know, it's interesting. I was having a discussion with Dane Fisher right before this call, and I'll plug our, you know, we're going to do some coaching dialogues and clinics that we'll post to a YouTube channel. during this pandemic. You know, and he had a great thing that he did with his guy Nathan Knight at William & Mary, added up all the minutes that the guy had spent in practice and in preparation versus, you know, on the court. And it's about 1% of your time in games relative to practice, you know, and it's about 1%. You know, a guy in a typical game will shoot, you know, unless he's your leading shooter, he's going to shoot 5 or 6 or 7 shots in a game. He's probably going to get 100 off in practice, you know. So that just embracing the process of practice, of preparation, of and the development will take place. So eventually, and as you saw, during the course of the year with AJ, with Josh Aduro, for sure, I want to get to playing as positionless basketball as you can get. You know, obviously we're not going to do that with Jamal Hartwell at his size, and obviously we're not doing it with Craig Calixt. But you know, we had AJ and Josh shooting threes. We had AJ more than Josh driving the ball, you know, from the perimeter. We had both of those guys posting up. You know, I think one of the really fun developmental pieces with AJ was his ability to pass the ball, his improved ability to pass the ball out of double teams. You know, and that's a process. And AJ, we were able to put more on his plate this year than before. You know, I think you gotta get good at one or two or three things and then add the fourth and fifth. So with Malik, which is a long-winded answer, Malik's going to be a forward. You know, I don't like getting caught up in fours or fives. You know, I want to be as positionless as we can, but we also don't want to, you know, put too much on a guy's plate at one point in time. So that adjustment, just like the adjustment for a quote-unquote shooter in Tyler Kolek, is it, adjusting the physicality and the pace and the length of guys closing out on you shooting. Well, it's the same way, you know, for somebody like Malik in terms of the physicality and things like that that he's going to go against. So,
Coach, in your offense, are the four and five basically the same thing then, or do they carry the same responsibilities? Sometimes I know it depends on who you have in the game, obviously, but you're talking about what you would, you know, what you would prefer, what you would, in, you know, what you're kind of envisioning. Does that include the four and five being interchangeable from slot to block?
Again, not trying to be obtuse here. You know, when we were in the year before this year, we were playing with a lot of four guards, you know, around one big. And then, you know, in terms of what the, or then certainly there were stretches this year, early in the year, and then as Justin was coming back, where we were doing much more of a four around one. Alignment. When Justin went down, we effectively traded Josh Aduro for Justin. So much more, you know, two forwards and three guards. You know, I adapt our offense to our personnel. So, you know, but certainly at the end of the year, it was, you know, Josh and AJ were more similar than dissimilar, even though their games are different. Whereas Greg, you know, was a different skill set. So ideally, yes. Ideally, at some point in time, you wouldn't even say a four or five. At some point in time, it'd be all interchangeable. That's not probably feasible at this point. But yes, typically, in how we played at the end of the year, the four and five were more interchangeable, and the one, two, and three were more interchangeable. In the year before that, it was probably the 1 through 4 were interchangeable, and the 5 kind of had a different.
But it's not set in stone. This is something that you just kind of adapt to during the season to the personnel that you have?
Yeah, and who do we think are the best players, and who do we think gives us the best chance to win, and you know, where do we think they operate best at that point in their career? You know, so certainly we're doing things with AJ that we weren't early on, because we wanted to walk before we jog before we ran. And I think we're now ready, or hopefully, where we don't need to necessarily put limits on what he does, just guidelines, if you will. And that's a process that takes place. So, long-winded, I think Malik is an elite shot blocker, rebounder, rim runner, finisher around the basket. If you saw his highlight mixtape, he gives AJ a run for his money in terms of, you know, some of his dunks.
Yeah.
His three-point shot. Now, I will say I went down to watch him practice in the fall, and he was shooting threes, you know. So, like, how much, how well, you know, that remains to be seen. And for all our freshmen, one of the things that will be a challenge is the 7 to 8 weeks that we traditionally have had with the incoming freshmen on campus in the summer, helping them get acclimated academically, in the weight room, the level of intensity, conditioning-wise, skill level, competition with our guys. That's been a really great kind of eye-opener, reality check. To then they go home for 3 or 4 weeks in August, when in between summer school and the start of the fall, to help kind of accelerate their learning curve. Certainly, we don't know when or if we'll have any of the freshmen on campus this summer, given, you know, COVID-19. So their developmental process will be stunted, you know, a little bit. You saw it with Jordan Miller. Anyone who came and watched us practice in June or July, or even went over to our team's tour of Spain in early August before Jordan Miller's freshman year, like, you know, that kid, he was 13th out of 13. And then as he was practicing and we thought he was going to redshirt, and again, part of it for Jordan, he didn't have to worry about playing time. He didn't have to worry about his role. He could just focus on getting better. And once he did that, he just started killing guys in practice to the point where I'm like, whoa, do we want to do this redshirt thing? And then, you know, the unfortunate injuries made it a necessity. I'm like, hey, he's going to play 15 minutes a game minimum because he was ready. And no way was he ready in November. So everyone matures and develops at their own pace. It's what makes coaching fun. And so, you know, Malik will develop at his own pace. You know, the one thing for all these freshmen, they're going to be joining a team that, you know, with a lot of veteran guys who played a lot of minutes, you know, so it's going to be a little bit harder for them to, you know, emerge and announce their presence than maybe in earlier years when maybe there were, you know, maybe a bigger hole.
Well, so speaking of development, let's touch on the fourth freshman coming in, Otis Frazier III. He's had the benefit of a year of prepping at Mount Zion, but he's a 6'6", 6'7", guard forward, if you will, coming out of Buckeye, Arizona. In regards to him signing just a few weeks ago, how does the process work? Do you find yourself having to continue to recruit even if there are no roster spots, just so that you have sort of like a contingency plan if, you know, a player were to transfer out of the blue? How does he stay on your radar?
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. I mean, I think if anyone is following college basketball, you know, if somebody said the only thing that COVID-19 couldn't shut down was a transfer portal. And, you know, this is a reality of college basketball in 2020. And you know, guys want to play, and they want to play bigger roles. And so, you know, if you operate as if you're never going to have, and I don't want anyone to leave our program, and we've been somewhat immune from the transfer epidemic, but also we're realistic enough to know that, hey, there might be somebody leaving our program. So, you know, we talked to our staff about, you know, we want a short list of four or five guys that we'd be interested in recruiting if something like that happened, not knowing if it would, not knowing who. Again, Pete Hutchins, I give him a ton of credit for identifying Otis, and, you know, he got a tip on him from I think the coach at Hargrave, or Otis had 25 points against Hargrave, and Hargrave is as good a program as there is. And Pete went to go watch him play, got him to come to our game against Dayton. Obviously, the guys from Mount Zion were partially coming to watch a kid named Toppin for some reason, who turned out okay from Mount Zion. Dwayne Simpkins and I went to go watch Otis practice on the morning before we left for Brooklyn. You know, so that Pete had seen Otis, and then Dwayne and I had gone and seen Otis. And then the night before we played St. Joe's in Brooklyn, we sent Bryson Johnson to the National Prep Tournament, and he saw him actually play two games there. And so we were in a fortunate position once, you know, the pandemic shut everything down, that every member of our staff had seen Otis live, and he'd actually seen us play. And so from that point, you know, when a scholarship became available, there was no question who we were going to recruit, who we wanted. And then it was phone calls and Zoom sessions and things of the like, you know, during the process.
And does that prep year, do you kind of count that as a redshirt year, or does he come in like as a freshman like everybody else?
I think yes and no. You know, Mount Zion is a phenomenal program. And what I would say for all of our freshmen, you know, Coach Howard at Oxon Hill, phenomenal coach. They got a great program. Won the PG County championship this year. You know, Tyler Kolek played for Dwayne Pina, who was a former, you know, played in the Big East at the time at Boston College. I've known Dwayne Pina for a long time. He was assistant coach at Brown. Don Newton at Longview. I went to watch a practice. I don't know if I've ever seen a better practice that I've observed, unless it was Mount Zion's practice, you know. You know, Coach Rod Harrison at Mount Zion, you're just really, really good coach, and they play really high level competition. And the thing that I noticed when I went to watch them practice, I'd watched film, so I knew what Otis could do, was Mount Zion runs a fairly complex offensive system, and Otis was playing three different positions and knew what everyone was supposed to be doing at all times. So I'm like, this kid's got a basketball IQ, you know, that's very, very good. It'll still be an adjustment. You know, you go to college, just the level of intensity and size, and, you know, everyone was all whatever, all region, all country, all state. But certainly that fifth year and the level of competition that Otis played against you know, we think will help him in the adjustment process.
Very nice. Well, now, just to go back to Ronald Polite, I know that in the Washington Post, they highlighted him, and you were quoted as saying, as good as Ronald is, he's going to come to a program that really values player development. The Mason program's a sleeping giant, and I think he's a sleeping giant. Now, for Mason Nation, for those that are getting restless and wanting that giant to sort of wake up, what do you say to them? What can we expect from 2020, 2021? And do you see us competing for an A-10 title this coming season?
Well, I think, you know, certainly the reason why I, with a Mason job, was attractive to me is because of, you know, what Mason accomplished. Not only in 2006, obviously, which was phenomenal, but in 2011, the last year that Coach L was here at Mason, knocking off Villanova in the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. That's our goal. That's where we want to aim for. It's taken longer than I would have liked. I don't think there's any question about it, you know, for a variety of reasons. You know, I think, unfortunately, we've been hit by some injuries that have hit us at key times. Certainly Justin's injury this year, not to mention Ian Boyd's. And, you know, I thought Jared Reuter, the year Jared Reuter was sitting out, he was an all-conference player. And he had a really unfortunate congenital hip abnormality that, you know, he was at 50 to 60% effectiveness the final year that he played for us. And never said a word about it and never complained about it. And you know, so you looked at having a team this past year with Jared Reuter as a potential all-conference front court player, a Justin Kyer with a potential all-conference front court player, and an Ian Boyd who is at the minimum instant offense off the bench and, you know, Mr. Sports Center. And I think you win in this league by being old and by being deep. And we thought we were going to be old and deep, and we weren't. And, you know, that it's unfortunate. We lost more games to scholarship players this year, you know, than probably three years combined before that. So, you know, those things happen. But I still think the potential at Mason is huge. And, you know, it's a tradition rich program. It's got a great facility plan. I think our administration has provided the support in terms of, you know, facility enhancements that were overdue, in terms of infrastructure enhancements. You know, I think the key to being really successful here at Mason is the ability to go get top-level talent from the greater DMV area. Now, I don't think it has to be exclusively that way, and I'm thrilled about a guy from Arizona, a guy from Rhode Island, and a guy from Texas. But I think this is the third consecutive year where we've had an all-Met selection, and certainly you saw what Jordan Miller is capable of doing. I think you've seen what Xavier Johnson is capable of doing. You know, Josh Aduro, while not an all-Met selection, you know, I think showed the potential to really be a very special player here. And I think Ronald's the same. And I think when I say sleeping giant, I think we're a program that hasn't made a splash on the national stage in a number of years. And I think we're ready to do that. And is it going to be this year? Again, just like with the freshmen, I'm not going to burden not only our freshmen, I'm not going to burden our team with excessive expectations. We're going to just try to attack every day to be successful. But I think we've got a nucleus for this year and moving forward for the future where we can put ourselves in the conversation. I think we'd have been in the conversation this year if it weren't the injuries. We can't change that. I do think one of the positives out of a negative situation of the injuries is that guys like A.J. Wilson, Jordan Miller, Javon Green, as upperclassmen, took steps that they might not otherwise have taken. And I think guys like Xavier Johnson and Josh Aduro got opportunities and you know, advanced their game further than they what might otherwise have done. You know, Josh Aduro was recruited with the mindset to redshirt behind a Jared Reuter, but he got thrown into the fire, and I think, you know, certainly at the end of the year, acquitted himself very, very well.
The Reuter information is, you know, we could probably have a whole separate podcast on that devoted to that topic, so I'm going to stay away. But I do want to ask about, like, the identity. I know you're not trying to label positions and you know, put high expectations, but is there an identity that the Dave Paulson team wants to play with next season?
So I think, you know, it's an interesting question, Brian. So the identity, what we want to be about, is about toughness, okay? About being, you know, playing with passion and toughness and focus. You know, being a team that communicates really, really well. A team that doesn't beat itself. That's an identity that we always want to be about. And I think in a lot of ways, in terms of toughness and passion, we're close. In terms of a team that doesn't beat itself, we're not where we need to be. We turn the ball over way too much. Good teams can't do that. And, you know, we spend more time talking about it and working on it than ever. Certainly my teams at Bucknell, my teams at Williams, were in the top five in the country at not turning it over. So we got to get to where we don't beat ourselves. And I think the continued development of ball handlers will be that way. In terms of identity of what we do, how we play on the floor, you know, one of the things that was really effective for us early in the year was the ability to wear people down with our depth, with our defensive intensity, and with our pressure defense. You know, and unfortunately, with Justin's injury and with Jamal was not himself physically from around exam period until, you know, and then he was finally diagnosed with his illness and then, you know, missed a number of games. And I don't think he was really himself until maybe at St. Bonaventure. So I think there was a 9-10 game window that really had an impact. And then obviously he hurt his knee last game of the year. And then Xavier Johnson was battling really severe knee tendonitis that got really bad, almost debilitating at the end of the year. And he kind of got through the end of the season on fumes, if you will, to the point where we really couldn't practice him. So that made pressing and playing up tempo and wearing people down with our depth, impossible. I do think we'll have, I hope, knock on wood, that we won't have that level of injury. And I think we'll have the depth where I think that can be an advantage for us.
Coach, man, thank you so much for all this information. It's just been awesome. Sorry we tried to pin, you know, we want to know where these freshmen are going to play. Like, that's all we're thinking about right now. Like, where are they fitting in? Can they contribute right away? You know, we're thinking
starting
about
lineups.
Holes
that... We're thinking about everything. So any little bit of information.
Well, you're thinking about the same thing that the kids think about. but we're trying to get them not to, because really and truly, the results. You know, the kids are focused on results and their parents are focused on results and you guys are focused on results. And yeah, it's a results-oriented business, but it's playing to your core values and your preparation and accepting frustration and how do you handle it and accepting roles, which puts you in a position to have the results. And so, you know, I think that maturation process is different for everyone, and there's no better two better examples than AJ Wilson, who did redshirt and, you know, was playing a role off the bench, and then put it all, I shouldn't say put it all together, nobody ever really puts it all together, but put it way more together than ever before, and I think is poised to have a phenomenal final year. And then a kid like Jordan Miller, who wasn't ready, we were going to redshirt him, and then because of injuries, you know, and because of his performance, was ready to play. And you know, Jordan had a very good sophomore year, but, you know, playing an entire season as opposed to half a season and being a focal point on somebody's scouting report as opposed to being the fifth option, he realized, wow, that's a lot harder, you know. Right. And I was really proud of how Jordan, who hit a little bit of a lull in the middle, you know, in January and early February, really kind of pushed through that and played very, very well at the end of the year. So dealing with that, I think Javon Green, dealing with expectations and being the leading scorer and you know, didn't always handle that the way you would have wanted him to, because it's a different deal being the top guy in the scouting report or being, you know, the hunted after you score 39 points and set an EBA scoring record. You know, he didn't, quite frankly, always handle that the way we would have wanted him to handle it. But that's a growing process. And there's a kid who had played a ton of minutes in his junior year having to deal with that. So I think those three guys who are going to be in some way, shape, or form three of our most pivotal key performers, they've all had their ups and downs dealing with the rigors, physical, mental, emotional. It's a developmental game. So I just think we're sky high about these four freshmen, but we have to temper that with an understanding of all the steps that have to take place before they can really be, you know, key, consistent performers. And if they can take all the steps from day one, then God bless them, we're going to play.
Yeah.
You know, and we've proven that, I think, over the course of the previous 5 years.
Coach, we could talk to you for hours, and we really appreciate it. Our goal was just to get some of those side stories about the recruiting trail and get some, you know, some inside information about each player. I think we accomplished that. So we want to thank you for taking your time to hop on our podcast. And, you know, we're always rooting for the program. Our number one, you know, the only reason we run this is not to bring the program down. We are, you know, we try our very best to be a nonstop hype machine for George Mason basketball. And so, you know, we're right by your side, and we're eager and excited for whenever we can get back to action.
Well, I'm eager for it too. You know, again, we don't know what's going to happen, what the new normal is going to be like and when it gets back. But rest assured, recruiting is going on every single day. Mentoring our players, you know, where we've had individual meetings and we're going to have film sessions with each guy individually on what they can improve. And sooner rather than later, we'll be back in Eagle Bank. And just want to wish everyone the best and stay safe. And looking forward to seeing everyone back at a Mason game next week.
Well, thank you, Coach. And I think we probably echo the same sentiments. We hope you and your family stay safe. And I know that we have our fingers crossed for, you know, a normal basketball season, whatever that might look like.
Well, let's hope it's normal in an abnormal way, and we make it deeper.
I love that. Thank you, listeners. Hopefully you enjoyed having Coach Paulson on the By George podcast. We'll be dropping more content here coming up. Make sure you stay safe out there. As always, we love you, Patriots. I'm dreaming of my intuition. It's probably why I'm always deep. I never take the time to think about it for making all these good decisions. But that's just as before I met you. I always knew we had potential. I never ever had a doubt, cause I knew our love was always so special. I was on a happy train, never wanna hit the hay. So she picked me up at 5, never wanna say goodbye. Always wanna spend the night, love when she wake up to me. I just want it every night, I just wanna go back.